I love water. Water, water, water. H2O down in my belly. What I'm on right now? I don't believe you. Good morning. I'm Bron Jorgendy, and this is what's happening in the world of drilling this morning. Happy Halloween, everybody. The Environmental Protection Agency announced 1 million in research grant funding to the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign for wastewater monitoring to rapidly detect the emergence and spread of infectious diseases. Next, the Department of Interior announced 210 million from the federal infrastructure law to bring clean, reliable drinking water to communities across the West through water storage and convenience projects. For our main story of this week, do you know what's in your water? Find out right after our news and this safety topic of the week. For this week's safety topic, I have two very important people in my lives. I have a future driller. Introduce yourself.
Hello, I am Brielle Yuri. I am a future driller.
And a robot right now.
Yep, I am a robot.
And who do I have right here?
Tom Brady.
No, who are you really?
Brielle Yuri, dressed up as Tom Brady.
Oh, that's a pretty good one to be dressed up as. And before we go out and go trick-or-treating tonight, we're going to talk about deadly killers in our industry that we really need to be thinking
Dad?
about because we in this industry need to be around for these people right here. When 2050 rolls around, they're going to be in their 30s, and I'm going to be in my late
Daddy?
70s. Yes, buddy.
Are we going trick-or-treating tonight?
Yeah.
You said.
Yep. Let's talk about these silent, slow, impacting situations on construction sites. We talked last few weeks that young men in construction that are exposed to loud noise in the first 3 to 5 years, by the time they get one of their first major hearing tests, they have the same hearing as a 50-year-old man working in an office building. We've talked about bad backs. What I really want to talk about is the rest of the hazards that over prolonged time really impact our health. And sure, it's a great joke for us to say, tough it up, buttercup. Yeah, diesel fuel fumes only cause cancer in California. No, they cause cancer everywhere. We need to be smart about these things. So as we jump into it, it looks like this. More than 200,000 people die every year from workplace-related cancer. This is according to the World Health Organization. They say there is a major rise in incidence of occupational cancer, and we can expect to see it not only in developing countries, but in developed countries that should have the right rules in place, have the right processes in place. But we continue, as I'm dressed in my USA Olympic uniform, go USA. We are very confident, arrogant, and dumb when it comes to our health. And they believe in the coming decades, as work processes involve more and more younger people that are exposed for a longer amount of time, that we're going to see much more significant health defects. Where do these come from? They come from chemical health hazards, which means there is a statistically significant evidence based on at least one study conducted in accordance with established scientific principles that acute or chronic health effects may occur in exposed employees. I want you to look at your SDS sheets and what it says for exposure. I want you to start thinking about permissible exposure limits. And these chemical hazards may take the form of gas, vapor, fumes, dust, fiber, and mist. Everything we got on a drilling and a pump site, on a construction site. These chemical hazards can damage the lung, skin, eyes, mucous membranes, and target specific organs in the body. Gas, vapors, fumes, dust, fiber, mist, all big things we need to be thinking about. And their primary route is inhalation. However, we also have chemical absorption that we need to think about. So when we break this down, nearly all materials that are airborne can be inhaled. Absorption through skin is another route of entry. The skin is the largest organ of your body and a common exposure site for liquid and airborne chemicals. Absorption through the skin can occur quite rapidly if the skin is cut or abraded. I want you to think about the last time you took a cleaner that you shouldn't have been using that says do not get in contact with your skin. And instead of it burning, your skin started feeling slippery or cold because it was killing the nerve endings. Or that slippery feeling is the outer piece of your skin sloughing off. Our skin is a major barrier to these. Next, ingestion of toxic materials can be swallowed and enter the body through gastrointestinal tracts. In the workplace, people can unknowingly ingest harmful chemicals when we eat, drink, or smoke in contaminated areas. This is why hygiene is so important in our industry right now, and considering when we're mixing bentonites and polymers, we're mixing grouts and concretes to dust inhalation in a quarry, all of these situations are very important to us. Beyond this, we've talked about hearing, we've talked about back, we've talked about soft tissue. We've now just talked about these exposures, and I want you to have those safety data sheets available and really start looking at exposure and what it says you're supposed to do when you're exposed and why it says we're to flush or wash for 15 minutes. Because that's the risk mitigation. And most of the time it also says seek immediate medical attention when complete. Silicosis is a big deal. Chemical absorption, your kidneys, your liver, your pancreas, those are all things that get attacked. This is something that we as an industry need to be smarter about. And the final piece, we're going to talk slow killers, melanoma, skin cancer, sunburns, not wearing the proper sun protection. It's a big deal. Western Michigan University just lost a great colleague and alum to skin cancer. I know plenty of great mentors, men and women, that have pieces of ears and nose and chunks taken out of their shoulders. That's gone on to also impact them later in life. So these are the slow, silent killers that don't allow us to pass on all the knowledge and enjoy our retirement the way they're supposed to. So I know it's Halloween, and we're talking ghosts and goblins, but we need to be smarter industry, because personally, being 42 with a 4 and a 6-year-old, I want to be part of their life for as long as I possibly can. And that should be your goal too. For this week in the news, we head to Washington, D.C., to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, who has announced $1 million in research grant funding to the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign to improve wastewater monitoring to rapidly detect the emergence and spread of infectious diseases in the current COVID-19 pandemic, and to detect other pathogens that could cause future pandemics. As research by the EPA and others have demonstrated during the COVID-19 pandemic, wastewater monitoring is an invaluable approach for detecting and tracking infectious diseases and ultimately protecting public health. This comes from Chris Fry, Assistant Administrator of the EPA's Office of Research and Development. This forward-looking EPA research grant will improve understanding of the presence of disease-causing pathogens in U.S. communities and support public health officials as they make decisions during the pandemic. The COVID-19 pandemic has highlighted the need for tools to monitor the emergence and the spread of infectious diseases. Innovative research is needed to help create effective wastewater sampling networks to allow for early detection of spread of infection from national to local levels. Additionally, the data collected during wastewater sampling needs to be made available in a format that can readily be used by public health agencies nationwide to address pandemics. I want you to think about that as our public officials, our CDC individuals, people appointed by the White House start talking about the spike in the spread of what's happening with COVID-19, or now as we look and hear about other pathogens that are in the water and what's going on there, and how this information needs to be readily available. The research awarded under this grant will improve how wastewater surveillance systems are used to detect pathogens in community populations. Using funding from this grant, researchers from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign plan to develop a system to rank locations where wastewater monitoring should take place to detect disease-causing pathogens. The research will focus on improving the accuracy of predictions using an integrated analysis of data, including weather, human mobility, healthcare, infrastructure, population density, socio-demographic, and information from the current COVID-19 pandemic. Results from this project are expected to include a transmission forecasting model for wastewater monitoring, a test system to identify optimal monitoring sites, and secure platform for data storage and analysis to provide actionable wastewater monitoring information to the public health officials for pandemic management. This is really big for everything that's happening. We understand that, yes, a virus like SARS or COVID-19, bird flu, all of these, it's a new normal. We are able to travel faster across the world than we ever have before. Therefore, we can spread things much faster. Results will be communicated to the public health officials through the National Association of County and City Health Officials. That acronym spells NACHOS with an extra C, which is collaborating with the grantee on this project. Other collaborators include researchers at the University of Florida and Portland State University in Oregon. This is great information, and this is going to help us continue to keep our communities safe here in the United States and across the globe. Next, on to the Department of Interior, who has just announced $210 million from the federal infrastructure law that will bring clean, reliable drinking water to communities across the West through water storage and conveyance projects. The projects are expected to develop over 1.7 million acre feet of additional water storage capacity, with enough water to support 6.8 million people for a year. The funding will also invest in two feasibility studies that could advance water storage capacity further once completed. Remember, we're seeing lots of studies right now and discussions about what feasibility studies have been done and how reliable that information is. So to fund more of these studies is very important for us in the Western United States and all drought-stricken areas. In the wake of the severe drought across the West, the department is putting funding from President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law to work to expand access to clean, reliable water and mitigate the impacts of this crisis. This comes from Secretary Deb Haaland. Water is essential to every community for feeding families, growing crops, powering agricultural businesses, and sustaining wildlife, which is very important to our environment. Through the investment we are announcing today, we will advance water storage and conveyance supporting local water management agencies, farmers, families, and wildlife. Through the bipartisan infrastructure law, the Biden-Harris administration has dramatically advanced our mission at the Bureau of Reclamation to deliver water and power in an environmentally economically sustainable manner for the American West. This comes from Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner Touton. Our investment in these projects will increase water storage capacity and lay conveyance pipelines to deliver reliable and safe drinking water and build resiliency for communities most impacted by drought. The infrastructure law allocates $8.3 billion for the Bureau of Reclamation water infrastructure projects over the next 5 years to advance drought resilience and expand access to clean water for families, farmers, and wildlife. The investment will repair aging water delivery systems, secure dams, and complete rural water projects. Also protect aquatic ecosystems. We're seeing a lot of that where we're getting rivers so low that our trout, our salmon, our ecosystems are being very much impacted. The funding announced today is part of the $1 billion in water storage, groundwater storage, and convenience projects provided by this law. This is big news for all of us. We're going to continue to see these feasibility studies. We're going to see water infrastructure strengthened. It's going to create more wells, more jobs. This is a big piece for our industry, and it's a big win for the Western United States. For our main story of the week, do you know what's in your water? It's 5 p.m. Do you know where your water is playing right now? Yes, a majority of our time is explaining to customers the different minerals, metals, organics, and possible engineered chemicals in a home water supply. As an industry, we have built our livelihood on the idea of privatized water wells for homes. In reality, only 15% of the entire country have private wells. So we need to discuss this. It's time we talk about water reuse and educate our family, friends, and customers on what it means. If we don't, we risk the possibility of folks like the creators of South Park educating our community with the Streaming Wars episodes. You can go to the internet right now and type in recycled water and get things that say, icky, using treated waste as drinking water. How can this be a possibility? I want you to think of this. With the regulations that the Environmental Protection Agency, the Clean Water Act, our local regulations, when that water is treated, recycled, and put back to 98.999% clean water, and we run it into a river, off into a watershed, what did we just commingle back into it that we haven't been able to study? This is the basic breakdown from the EPA. Water reuse, also commonly known as water recycling or water reclamation, reclaims water from a variety of sources. It then treats and reuses it for beneficial purposes such as agriculture and irrigation, potable water supplies, groundwater replenishment, industrial processes, and environmental restoration. Water reuse can provide alternatives to existing water supplies and be used to enhance water security, sustainability, and resilience. Water reuse can be defined as a planned or unplanned. Unplanned water reuse refers to situations in which a source of water is substantially composed of previously used water. Think of our rivers. Think of our Great Lakes that have wastewater that's being dumped into them that's already been treated and has a permit to be released. A common example of unplanned water reuse occurs when communities draw from their water supplies, such as rivers, like the Colorado River and the Mississippi River, that receive treated wastewater discharges from communities upstream. Planned water reuse refers to water systems designed with a goal of beneficially reusing recycled water supply. Often communities will seek to optimize their overall water use by reusing water to the extent possible within the community before the water is reintroduced to the environment. Examples of planned reuse include agriculture and landscape irrigation, industrial process water, potable water supplies, and groundwater supply management. It's an excellent article released by the Associated Press by Brittany Peterson, who does a phenomenal job talking about our environment and wastewater and water. It was published last week, and it's titled Colorado to Reuse Water for Drinking, Creating New Supplies. In it, it discusses the benefits of utilizing recycled water. She interviews Eric Seufert at 105 West Brewing Company in Castle Rock, Colorado, who first ran a test batch of beer utilizing recycled water in 2017. I want you to think about this. Most of our major breweries across the country use reverse osmosis systems right now to treat their water. That means 3 gallons in, 1 gallon out, with 2 gallons being very concentrated, undesirable wastewater. This happens in lots of our processes throughout the country beyond brewing. The opportunity to use recycled water responsibly, as in injecting it back into an aquifer storage and replenishment well, ASR wells, or to be able to provide it back into a watershed that is going to positively utilize it versus getting pushed back out to sea or other situations that can happen. Recycled water is here. We have droughts. We have extreme weather. We have large populations. And we've already seen that the farming industry for animal production and crops utilize a lot of our water from our infrastructure, from groundwater to streams and rivers to reservoirs. And we need to understand that this reuse process can become a very key process for us. Originally, think about this. California law didn't allow cities to put recycled wastewater directly into municipal water distribution systems. Instead, they required cities to first inject that water underground into an aquifer where further natural filtration occurs. However, it's 2022. We've heard Jesse Richardson say that we're in a 1,200-year drought. We're seeing day zero situations of cities having to ration water across the world. And in the U.S., today, Arizona, California, Colorado, Florida, New Mexico, and Washington all have started the process for rules and are working to finalize guidance on direct potable reuse. That is taking that treated water and putting it into a source that we can immediately use for industry, irrigation, and for human consumption. We don't get to get off planet and colonize another world without understanding how vital recycled water and reuse is. Today, all of these states are working towards better plans that are going to help progress our civilization. It's very key that we continue to pay attention and advocate for this. Yes, it is very important as water well drillers for us to get to drill more water wells. It's very important for us to protect the environment as all drillers. But in reality, we also need to understand that we can be environmentally responsible stewards that can capture and reuse water. And a home system could be just as vital as a massive system. And we've covered this for weeks now with New Mexico in the Navajo Nation, or California and Oregon, or the discussion of the waters of the United States right now and permitting of runoff and waste going into rivers that directly impact watersheds. So if we can capture this water, treat it, know that it's safe, know that we're not putting it back into a watershed that could have forever chemicals or any X factors that are coming into that water source that have now impaired that 98, 99% clean water. It's a big deal. I know it's scary and it's Halloween, and we should be talking about who's the best driller to be a Halloween costume. Obviously, it's Bruce Willis, Harry Stamper from Armageddon. Maybe Wahlberg in the Deepwater Horizon, but that's not water well drilling. These are the things we need to be thinking about. Clean water, sustainability, and then go out, enjoy trick-or-treating this evening. Thank you. I want to thank you for joining episode 35 of the Driller Newscast. Yeah, we went a little wild this week, and I paid some homage to Will Ferrell and the Anchorman cast. And now I'm dressed like Beerfest USA uniform. But sometimes we need to cut loose as we talk about some very serious topics. And when it comes to what's going on with responsible use of water and reuse of water, looking at all the great things the infrastructure laws and the Inflation Reduction Act are involved in helping our industry protect the environment and grow our business. And finally, those slow, deadly killers that we need to start thinking about, from chemical hazards to inhalation to proper sunblock to acute silicosis, mesothelioma. There's plenty of things out there. So as we enjoy tonight with our children, our grandchildren, our friends, handing out candy to the ghosts and goblins, let's think about how we can be smarter and safer and not celebrating this as the Day of the Dead, but as we're all out trick-or-treating. Thanks, everybody.